It's now time for The Sit Down with Don Tony.
The Sit Down, where Don Tony talks one-on-one with his followers.
What are you looking at?
About the world of pro wrestling, pop culture, and so much more.
The Sit Down with Don Tony.
And now, your host, Don Tony.
All right, it's 8:20, not 4:20, 8:20. So we should be twice as blitzed tonight. How's it going, everyone? Sit Down, yours truly is live. Hope everybody had a wonderful weekend. Tomorrow, back to work, back to school, back to Raw, Groundhog Day. I think that is in order. But, you know, I really can't complain overall as far as pro wrestling right now. WWE is definitely a lot hotter than it was a year or two ago. AEW definitely doing a little bit better, having that additional option in the Saturday show. We have All In a week from now, and then a week after that is All Out. And we also have Payback. Tuesday is NXT Heatwave. I mean, we didn't even talk about Impact Wrestling and others, so... You know, good variety of pro wrestling out there. You're not going to like every little thing that you see, but there's enough that if you're a wrestling fan, it's a good time to enjoy some wrestling right now. I hope everybody's doing well. Sit Down Sunday night for those that might be newer to the show or maybe you're just stopping by and never seen it before. Format is simple. I show up with no research, no notes. I come in with a blank sheet. Everybody who is live gets the opportunity to give a little input as far as what we talk about tonight. Questions, comments, whatever you want to talk about. Now, there's a couple of quick rules, not necessarily rules, but guidelines. In the chat, if you have a question, write in capital letters the word question before it so I could spot it. If you have a comment that you want me to share with the world, just write the word comment. Super chats are never required, but they are very much appreciated. They will always get VIP immediate status. And something else. We talked about it for the last 2 weeks, and I decided to do it a little bit differently. There are some of you out there that want to be part of this. There are some of you out there that do not. This is optional. But, you know, earlier this year, I became, I did a conversation, that's the best way to put it, with Matt Riddle's girlfriend, Misha Montana, had some really, really good talk on and off the show, and became friendly with her. And there's a lot about her, and there's a lot about Matt Riddle that is very, very private, and that you may not actually know. And not many people have reported it because they don't want to bother doing the research to get the facts. But it is true that Matt Riddle and Misha Montana are having a kid together. I know exactly when the kid is expected. And based on the baby shower gifts available, I think I know what the sex of the child will be also. But since they have not made that public, I certainly will not make that public. I have a 50-50 shot of being right, don't you think? But here's what we originally were going to do, and this is what I decided to do. Originally, I was going to put the registry on the screen and let everybody, you know, just decide, like, what we should get. But, you know, there's some personal information on there that I don't think, you know, that some trolls out there should get their hands on. So I decided to pick the gifts myself. And what I will do is anyone out there that wants to be part of the gifts, I am buying a card. Originally, I was going to go with this. Congratulations on your little nugget. Then I thought about this, you know, and then there were four. I think that's a beer, a glass of wine, a coffee, and not as a baby bottle. But then this one actually caught my eye. Shits and giggles are coming your way, but mostly shits. I haven't decided yet what we're going to do as far as a card, but if you want to be part of the card as well, any super chats that come in that include the hashtag bro, from now until the end of the month, you will be part of the card. I am buying the gifts this week, but I'm not going to give them the card until September. So, and I said it's optional because some people just, you know, want to donate to the family, to the expenses. Maybe you don't want to be part of this. So if you want to be part of it, just include the hashtag bro with your super chat or super thanks, and I will make sure to include your name. I'll take a picture of it so everybody can see before we send it out. And the two gifts that we are going to give them is we're going to give them this crib that's got like, it's like a little playpen and shit like that. That's pretty cool. I didn't have good shit like that when I was born. I don't even remember what I had. I think I laid on a cold floor. So we're gonna give them that. That's the actual gift, and we're going to give them one of these, you know, when a baby like runs around the neighborhood, you know, and, you know, it just is contained. I don't know what that thing is actually called, but so we're going to get them both of those. You know, they're the two nicest gifts. So, yeah, I'm going to order it probably tonight or tomorrow. So that's the deal. And you'll hear me repeat this in a very, very condensed way from now until the end of the month. So, again, it's optional. If you put hashtag bro after as part of your super chat, then I know you want to be part of it. So, as we always do, super chats do give some VIP treatment. I will get into them first, and then we'll head on over to the chat room, and we will talk about whatever is on your mind. So, without further ado, let's kick this episode off, and let's see what we are going to talk about. All right, we got $10 super chat from Sticky Fingers Frank. Thank you, Mr. Frank. DT, my thoughts on the latest pandering they're using for All In. Quote, WrestleTix reports AEW's All In has now distributed more tickets than people inside the AT&T Stadium for WrestleMania 32. LOL. My thoughts? If you're an AEW fan, you should be very proud of the turnout. This is history. It is a big deal. It's very, very cool. For all the wrestlers and all the people that you never get to see on camera that is involved with AEW, this is a beautiful thing. Make no mistake about it. Wrestlers, employees, Uber fans, this is reason to celebrate. There's this weird element, though, that have this complex that AEW has to be bigger than WWE. AEW has to be looked at as better than WWE. The evil Vince, the corporate conglomerate. That's why you get this. The word distributed, that means more tickets were given out. You know, they sold over 80,000 tickets. It's pretty fucking awesome. But that's not good enough for some people. Now it's distributed. Remember SummerSlam? We were the only people that brought it up. WrestleTix reported that there was, what, 50,000 tickets sold? Or it was either 50,000 or 60,000, and the attendance there was 59,000, I think it was. They were off by 9,000. And people are like, well, DT, you're bringing up Uber drivers, you're bringing up security, you're bringing up vendors, you're bringing up employees of the building. Well, what the fuck is this with the distributed? You know, it's the same shit. You know, you can't criticize WWE for boasting 59,000 fans and then turn around and say, oh, they surpassed WrestleMania 32 in tickets distributed. Distributed doesn't mean sold. So thousands of tickets will be given out, probably. But just celebrate like a normal human being. Celebrate like there is such an inferior complex with some whack jobs out there. Please, I'm not talking about the regular, everyday AEW fan. I think what they're doing is tremendous. I have nothing but praise for AEW for this. Listen, some people that I was part of with indie shows back in the day when I was doing my awful shit, to see Nana and others out there in fuck in front of 90,000, come on. That in itself puts a smile on my face from ear to ear. You know, you don't need to sell it to me. This is awesome. But that's not enough for some people out there. So my thoughts, these are whack jobs. These are whack jobs. You know, it's not okay for WWE, but it's history for AEW. That's my thoughts on it. Frank, thank you. Mikey Ravello with a 10 spot. Thank you, Mikey. DT, would I consider doing a watch party for NXT Heatwave? I was there Friday night and you were hilarious hosting. I think it would be cool to do one for NXT. Hashtag bro. So you will be in. I guess I can. I mean, I'm not going to lie. When I told the watch party company that I would return on a limited basis, I promised them four shows. We've done two. We did one this past Friday. We did one the Friday before. Unfortunately, the turnout is light. You know, Tuesday I got a Patreon show to do right after NXT. So if I plant my fat ass here at 8 o'clock on Tuesday, that means I'm planting my fat ass here for 4 hours. So I will think about it. I will definitely let everybody know by Monday. I don't mind doing it. I mean, maybe I'll just open the floor to everyone for NXT since I don't expect many people to show and just let everybody talk. The last two watch parties, I hosted it by myself because, you know, there's a couple of reasons why. But some people just felt intimidated to talk because it was always the same people on the floor every single time. And sometimes those conversations overtook what we're watching. And the discussion should be about what we're why. I mean, you know, so the company said you should just host it by yourself. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. But thank you, Mikey. Ronnie C., I saw this right before we went live. I don't know how you want me to answer this. Is it true that Sky Blue has the IQ of a sloth? And when I'm not kidding. When I saw this right before we went live, I hit Google. And I typed in sloth because I didn't remember what it was. I was thinking like the slug that you step on, you know, that you squash sometimes in the summertime. The sloth is that, I don't even know what the fuck it is. It looks like a penguin that has these big claws and everything is on slow motion. Could you imagine if a sloth masturbated? I mean, I'm sorry for this sounding disgusting, but could you just imagine that? People on audio only right now say, what the fuck is he doing? You just imagine a sloth. I don't know Sky Blue personally. I think the reason why Ronnie may have said that was because of the interview she did with RJ City, which I saw. I thought I would be very nice about it. I never brought it up. She came off as naive. I don't know anything about her personally. She seems like a sweet person. For all I know, she could be this sinister, you know, this sinister little 20-something-year-old that takes, like, sand crabs and blows them up in a microwave. I don't know. But, no, I don't think she's got the IQ of a sloth. But I will say this. Her naiveness, if that's even a word, in the RJ City interview, I think was genuine. I think some of the things she didn't have a fucking clue. But, you know, you got to understand, too, not everybody's from the city. RJ City. No, not everybody's from the city. Some people from the country. Some people, their lives are a little simpler. I don't know much of her background. I'm not interested. So, you know, I think she's just more of naive and inexperienced than anything else. But how you came up with a sloth, I don't know. Can you imagine if Booker T was a sloth? And I'm doing it fast. I'm doing it fast. Five-time WCW champion. Eric Williams with the two spot. Thank you, Eric. Shout out to you. What's my favorite type of pizza? I like a regular slice, New York slice. Chicago pizza is fine. Chicago pizza is not really pizza. Chicago pizza is like a pie. It's a pie that has sauce and cheese and all the elements of a pizza. But, you know, to me, it doesn't taste like pizza. For me, New York pizza, regular round pie cut into 8 slices, you know, to me, that's my favorite slice. I like margarita slices. I like Sicilian slices. But for me, there's something about it, just a regular slice that's got an even distribution. Sicilian slices are too much bread. If anyone's ever had, some places call it a square slice. You ever look at it? Like it's like 5 inches thick as far as the crust goes. Sicilian, to me, is too much bread. Margarita slices are good, but good, genuine margarita pizza uses fresh mozzarella. And fresh mozzarella, they'll just put like a little piece on top. You get like a margarita slice, it's like the size of a silver dollar, the mozzarella. It's not like embedded all over they don't take that shredded shit and just spread it all across. They put little pieces of real fresh mozzarella. So what happens? You buy the margarita slice, you see this round little center of cheese, and you usually pick that off, and then you realize, oh, I just got bread and sauce left over. So for me, a regular slice. So thank you, Eric. And that is our early super shout-outs. Let's head on over to the chat. Somebody asked earlier, I think it was Nathaniel, and it's a good question that some of you may not know the answer, and I'm going to just share it right now. Does Wembley have a dome? Does it have a roof? And the answer is yes, with an asterisk. Wembley Stadium has a roof. The problem is the roof does not cover the pitch. And basically, in simple English terms, the center of the field will still be hit by rain. Where the ring will still be hit by rain. Some people closer to the ring will still be hit by rain. If the rain is wind blown and it's blowing a little bit on an angle, people in the crowd, many of them will still get wet. Let me make this clear. As of right now, there's no chance, a heavy chance of rain. Some people have said 60%. Some people have said 20%. It's a fucking week away. When we get to like Wednesday or Thursday, that's when you start being a little bit more, you know, attentive towards it. But right now, nothing as far as a serious threat for rain. But obviously, if you're going, you know, be prepared for rain or not. Bring a poncho. You could get those disposable ponchos on Amazon. You get like a 10-pack for like $10. You know, I mean, you could just buy a better one and it folds up to nothing. You know, this way, God forbid, you do get rain. You just don't look like Samoa Joe. And I still, not for nothing, like one of my last memories of Samoa Joe in WWE is when he wore the poncho at WrestleMania. And that just looks so sad and depressing. I don't know why. Seriously. I think for Halloween, if I don't lose more weight and I start gaining weight again, I think I'll just go as Samoa Joe WrestleMania announcer for Halloween. I'll just put one of those sad-looking ponchos on there, and I'll just have that look on my face like, man, this life sucks. So some people that were asking about Wembley. I see a few people asking about Edge and AEW. Let me make this clear. I talked about it in detail yesterday. Little cheap plug. And if you didn't check out Saturday's Don Tony Show, you really missed a good one. Still could check it out. It was really, really solid. I'll say this about Edge. First of all, I did read the reports of what Fightful, because some people emailed me and said, DT, you're always putting over Fightful. What do you have to say about this? Fightful's reporting that many people within AEW believe that Edge could sign with them. I don't disagree with that. But take a step back and think about what Fightful said. There are wrestlers within AEW that think Edge could sign with them. They said that about Jay White. Wrestlers in WWE said that about Kenny Omega in February. Wrestlers think, hey, why not? Come here. Have fun. Work a limited schedule. Match once in a blue moon. Get the Sting schedule. That's not contract negotiations. Those are individuals that think, hey, I think he could come. But does that mean any of them talk to Adam Copeland? No. Does that mean that Edge is negotiating? No. We don't know what Edge's future will be. But I will summarize what I said yesterday. Number one, WWE has so much fucking money right now. I don't think Edge is demanding 10 mil to stick around. Number one. Number two, WWE was very, very good to Edge and Beth Phoenix and their family. And Edge is one of the most beloved guys in that company. If anything, you know, I get it. I know what some people are going to say. Well, DT, Vince McMahon is only going to own 16% of the company, and it's not a family-run business anymore that was publicly traded. Now you got a whole bunch of strangers from TKO, and they don't have ties with Edge, blah, 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 blah. I get it. The same people are still running it right now. So I just, to see, this is not Ric Flair, where WWE did not want Ric Flair to wrestle anymore, retired him, and then Ric Flair goes to Australia, feuds with Hogan, and then signs with TNA. Edge is 100% authentic about his body, about his health, about his well-being, quality of life. And for anyone out there to think that he lied to the Toronto fans or lied to the WWE Universe, you know, it's just bullshit. It's fantasy. There are people out there that would love to see Edge and AEW, Edge and Christian realign. I would love to see Edge and Christian realign. I've said it many times. I think Edge's retirement match should be against Christian or with Christian. But you got to keep a little realistic here. Think about the reasons why Edge is cutting back on his wrestling. You think he's going to turn into Jeff Hardy if he signs with AEW and he's just going to go balls out again? No. His quality of life, his future, his family, you know, what WWE did for him, all this comes into play. So remember, the same people out there that are buzzing on the same people that said in February that wrestlers in WWE feel that Kenny Omega could sign, that they would, Jay White and others. It's no secret. AJ Styles, Finn Balor, and a bunch of others would have loved to have Kenny Omega in WWE. There's no dispute. They've been interviewed. They've been asked about it. The interviews are more relaxed now. It's not a taboo subject anymore. But just think about what Fightful said. People within AEW think that Edge could sign. All right, that's cool. But that's not negotiations with Edge. Reel it in, everybody. Reel it in. Think about the overall picture. And then you understand that this doesn't replace contract negotiations. So, okay. Let's see. Let's spread this out a little bit. Mo Word says Edge looks too old and looks cool. Looks too old to look cool for new signing AEW. Edge is still in great shape, man. Edge could still go. The thing is, we don't know how rough he feels afterwards. Plus, you know, as I said yesterday, I don't want to repeat everything I said yesterday. If people missed the show, you know, I feel bad, but, you know, I'm not going to just repeat it. But I'll say this, you know, Edge, you know, had major neck issues, had major issues, you know, that could affect his quality of life. And he recovered enough that he could return to the ring. Those issues are still there. And it's still risky. And the second time around, it could be even worse. So there is a phrase, quit while you're ahead. He's getting to see his kids get older. He wants to live, you know, with his wife and, you know, enjoy life. You know, wrestling, he's content now. It feels like Edge is at peace. Edge got his return. He got his closure. And he got an opportunity to have his kids see him perform and see how beloved he is. You know, so, you know, there's a lot of different things that are that we're talking about that do not apply in the same scenario as other wrestlers. So, all right. Will Damian Priest successfully cash in Money in the Bank? Asks Taylor. I'm not sure. I mean, I don't have no magic answer. I don't get paid for that magic answer. I think Finn Balor costs Damian Priest in the end. Seth Rollins is going to have to drop that title to somebody. Who that person is, you know, it's still a little too early. But it almost feels like Finn Balor could fuck Damian Priest. And that might lead to the full-blown split. Damian Priest wins, that could be a lot of jealousy on Finn Balor's part. But right now, I think Seth has to hold on to that title a little bit longer. Seth Rollins, you know, had to overcome that trinket championship, created title, secondary championship. Rollins is busting his ass to represent that belt. They got to keep it on him a little bit longer. This way, when he does lose it, people are like, ah, you know, his reign really wasn't, you know. So, okay. Will Rally Sport, Ali won. Thoughts on Thunder Rosa saying on a vlog that she will get medically checked in 3 weeks. Can't wait for her to return. She's at All In commentating. It's a shame that she couldn't return to the ring at All In. She's going to do Spanish commentating at All In, which is fine. Personally, I don't understand why she has not been having an on-air role on Collision. You know, I brought up this example 5-6 weeks ago. I mean, it's been that long already. I think back to Terry Funk in 1989, when Terry Funk came back to WCW and was doing interview segments. And then he ultimately turned on Ric Flair and got back in the ring, and they had one of the greatest feuds of my lifetime that I've ever seen. But Thunder Rosa walks into Tony Khan's office and then nothing happens for 3 months. Why could she not do backstage segments, get on TV? As I've said before, she could have been on TV the last 3 months on Collision, not every single week, but they could have had something where when Nyla Rose wrestled or another heel wrestles, somebody could like throw it in her face like, you know, why don't you do something about it? You know, you can't even wrestle right now. They could have teased that a little bit. And then ultimately Thunder Rosa, I think the reason why they haven't put her on TV is because she's going to come back with her bag, just like CM Punk did. Because people, I brought up that idea the night CM Punk came out with the bag. That Thunder Rosa's got it. She lost her championship the same way CM Punk did. Well, CM Punk brawled on top of it. But see, Thunder Rosa's got to come back with the real women's championship. You look at AEW's excessive use of titles. You don't think that Thunder Rosa is not going to come out with the real women's championship? Of course that's happening. So that's probably why they kept her off TV. Like the first time you see her on Collision, she's got to have a bag in her hand. That's what I think. But hey, she's getting closer to a return. That's awesome. That's awesome. Rick says he's pretty sure she asked the doctor on a vlog if she had long to be cleared long ago. I get it, but they should have never showed her walking into Tony Khan's office then. You know, I mean, if there was so much uncertainty 2+ months ago, it looks goofy. Like, she walked into the office and nothing. You know, again, I think at that time, I don't think CM Punk, they had the idea of him bringing the bag back. So I think shortly thereafter, that thought was put up there. And then they said, oh, if we do it for Punk, we got to do it for her. So, you know, whatever. But that's where I kind of see this going. So, all right. Let's see. Michael Gonzalez asked, do I think a gimmick like Mankind could work today? Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, listen, when Mankind debuted, we knew it was Cactus Jack. We knew it was Mick Foley. We already knew that he was a little bit sick and twisted with the bumps he was taking. He already feuded with Vader. He did a lot of work in WCW, Japan, ECW. So when he came in and he started ripping his hair out, and he's, you know, talking about crazy shit, you know, it was interesting, but it was believable because he was a crazy motherfucker. You know, I mean, one of the nicest people outside the ring, but he was one of the craziest people inside the ring. I think Mankind could absolutely still been a prevalent gimmick today. I've said this many times before, Undertaker would be a lot different. American Badass absolutely could debut today. Later reincarnations of The Undertaker, yeah. But 1991 Undertaker, I don't care how badass it would have looked. People, social media would have ripped that shit apart. They would have ripped that shit apart. They would have said, hey, Vince, it's not 1985 anymore. People would never have given Undertaker a chance. Undertaker wouldn't have had that history, legendary status. This would just be a young 20-something-year-old Mark Calloway, you know, debuting a dead man gimmick. And they would say, who's this? You know, even, well, Paul Bearer, Percy Pringle had some history. And for some regions, you know, definitely was legit. So maybe he could have helped a little bit, but it would have been like, fuck, he's coming out with an urn. Oh, Paul Bearer, ha ha, I get the joke. Paul Bearer, he's a Paul Bearer, ha ha ha. People would not have given it a chance. That gimmick debuted in 2023. It would get eaten alive and spit out. And it would have said, NTM would not in 1985 anymore. Twix is asking, how much longer will Sting wrestle? I think Sting retires this year and next year. Maybe he wants to go until he's 65. I mean, I think he retires this year and next year. I don't think, you know, he's another one. You got to quit while you're ahead. And some of these bumps he was taking, you know, because of his legendary status, a lot of wrestlers in AEW, shut the fuck up. Don't say nothing about Sting, how bad he's banged up or how scary that shit was in the back. Because he is so legendary, he gets to pretty much do whatever he wants. I guarantee you, if Sting whipped out the glass, Jungle Boy would in the back and said, I wanted to do that. Sting does whatever the fuck Sting wants, and no one in that company is going to tell him otherwise. That's why I said I hope Sting doesn't retire because of injury. And I still got that fear, you know, even if it's not from a stupid bump. You get older. You know, your bones get more brittle. I don't care how much milk or vitamins he takes or fucking bone supplements. Your body gets more brittle. The muscles get more weak. And sooner or later, injury can happen. Not crippling injury, but I always felt that Sting's retirement, if he doesn't quit while he's ahead, will be because of injury. And that would kind of suck to have him retire because of an injury. Okay. Jamil, do I think WWE is telling the same story with Cody Rhodes as they did with John Cena in 2012, 2013? Absolutely not. Nothing against his dad, but John Cena, the senior, baby. John Cena's dad, baby, is not one of the most beloved wrestlers of our generation or our lifetime, baby. No, Cody Rhodes is living the American dream right now. A lot of people that are younger don't understand a lot of the little nuances of what Cody is doing is very similar to what Dusty did at the time. Kev and I had this conversation right after WrestleMania. I don't remember what episode that we did, but if you search in the synopsises, you will see it. We explained in detail about Dusty's road to the championship. And Dusty didn't automatically fight Ric Flair. Dusty didn't automatically fight Harley Race. Dusty Rhodes had to deal with Tully Blanchard. Dusty Rhodes had to deal with the Four Horsemen. Dusty Rhodes had to deal with others. And Cody Rhodes is pretty much, they are doing, they're using the Dusty template, but they're doing in a contemporary 2023 version of it. It has nothing to do with John Cena. John Cena, 10 years ago, you know, we were getting that Super Cena, you know, role model for the kids. You know, I can't criticize much about him these days. Everything he's done for Make-A-Wish. John Cena was the quintessential role model. You remember, we went from Attitude Era to Ruthless Aggression Era with John Cena. You know, he would do that stuff. Hey, I don't care if, you know, you all may be feeling, you know, right now pretty sick. And I don't care because you could suck my... And then he'd hold the mic up and everybody would go, dick. I think a lot of people, WWE wants you to forget about Thugonomics. And I'm not talking about word life. I'm talking about Thugonomics, you know, back when he was feuding with even Undertaker when he pissed on his grave. John Cena ended up becoming the quintessential role model. And you see today that a lot of what we saw 10 years ago is truly what John Cena is. This is nothing similar to what John Cena's push was. So, all right. We got a super shout out, and this has football to do with it. This is a local question, but I will be more than happy to answer this. XXX, hi DT, break down the better quarterback, Eli Manning or Phil Simms? My friend, I grew up a New York Giants fan. I remember when Phil Simms debuted in 1979. Yes, I am that old. I have Phil Simms' debut game. I think he threw three interceptions. I absolutely loved Phil Simms as a quarterback, number 11, when he was on the Giants. But Eli Manning, I think, was just that much better. If I was playing a video game right now and I got to play like retro Giants, I could make my retro team. I would have Phil Simms quarterbacking before Eli Manning. Only because I liked Phil Simms better. You know, the 86 Super Bowl was incredible. Then you remember 90 and with Jeff Hostetler, right, was a quarterback. When the Bills, Scott Norwood, you know, missed the field goal. As far as ability and stats go, I think Eli Manning was just that much better than Phil Simms. I think if they faced each other in a Super Bowl, I think Eli Manning probably would have a better chance of winning. It's just, and listen, as far as what Mike is saying, he's top 10 in every major stat, Eli Manning, yeah. But understand that Phil Simms did not have as long of a career, and Phil Simms had many more injuries. So, you know, if you want to compare averages, okay. Understand too, you know, the Giants were defense. Giants were more of a running game. And I think people forget about the 80s New York Giants, it was more about defense. Lawrence Taylor heading up that ship. So it's a little bit different. Eli Manning, that those teams are more offense-based, and Phil Simms' teams are more defense-based. Phil Simms, didn't he win a Super Bowl once by only throwing like 17 passes? Eli Manning would throw 17 by halftime. But Eli Manning, definitely have to give him his due. Definitely deserves what he has received. Thank you for that, XXX. Okay. Eric is asking, when will Jimmy versus Jey Uso happen? I don't know. A lot of people don't want to see that. People want to see it because of, there was a bucket list match that they want to have. You know, at the end of the day, you know, people didn't want Bubba Ray and D-Von to split up. And they split them up, the Dudleys back then, and D-Von became irreverent. And it sucked. It sucked. You know, as I said yesterday, WWE understands how much ratings Roman Reigns and Jey Uso and the Bloodline and the whole storyline is bringing in. You're not going to start taking people off TV for months and screw up those ratings, especially when you're still negotiating TV. They want to capitalize. Listen, I got news for you all. When I get into the ratings tomorrow, this weekend ratings, I think some people are going to be a little bit disappointed on what SmackDown's rating was. You know, Edge possibly retiring didn't bring in the numbers that you think it did. Bloodline still blows away Edge's retirement match. You know, I'm telling you, it's sad, but it's true. WWE's still negotiating TV. They're not going to jeopardize TV. They're milking it right now. They're milking it, teasing like I said, four-way. Roman versus Solo versus Jimmy versus Jey. Bloodline, four-way for the undisputed WWE Universal Championship. Kevin and I have been talking about that since Money in the Bank. Still think it's going to happen. Maybe it happens in Survivor Series. Listen, again, I don't like repeating a lot of previous shows, but I'll say this one thing. If you do a four-way, all Bloodline for the Undisputed Championship, you have to explain why Jimmy and Jey would fight each other. Now you got that explanation. Now you got a reason why Jimmy and Jey would fight each other. Up until what happened at SummerSlam, it didn't make sense. When we said, Money in the Bank, look at all the feedback from that time. When Kevin and I said there's going to be a four-way or Bloodline for that championship, there's going to be a match. The number one comment that everybody kept saying is, why would Jimmy and Jey fight each other? Are they going to both be greedy that they want to become champion? I mean, you needed something to put a little bit of a rift between the brothers. And they did. This is going to set that up. All right. Guardian Chaos. What's up, Chaos? Ric Flair or Harley Race is better NWA champion? That's easy. It's not easy, but it's easy. Ric Flair, by far. And the reason why I say that is because Harley Race, comparing Harley Race and Ric Flair is like comparing apples to oranges. They're both fruit, but they're not the same. But Ric Flair, if he was coming to your territory, if he was defending that championship, it was spectacle. He had the pomp and circumstance. He had the aura about himself. Picture Harley Race coming out of a plane for a match. People would be like, it's not Harley Race. Harley Race would drive up in a pickup truck. Harley Race was tremendous as NWA champion. Had all the tools. One of the greatest of all time. But as far as spectacle goes, that's why Ric Flair is ahead of him. Because Ric Flair would draw a hell of a lot more tickets just because of that spectacle. Harley Race was tremendous. I used to love watching Harley Race. Even when he was king, Harley Race, I still appreciated some of what he did. But Ric Flair definitely gets the nod on that one. Tristan, I talked about that Texas death match on Wednesday Night Dynamite. To me, it's the worst match ever on AEW Dynamite, and that's including matches from Marina Shafir. I like Marina Shafir. I root for her. I want her to get better. But if anything, she should be happy for that match Wednesday. The Texas death match was, to me, the worst match in Dynamite history. I had people saying to me, oh, no, Charmel and Charmel Sullivan and Jenna Marasca was worse. I didn't know they wrestled on Dynamite. People need to read what I say. It's the worst match in Dynamite history. Not wrestling history. Dynamite history. Chaos is asking me, Dusty Rhodes or Terry Funk as NWA champion? Wow. See, my bias, I go with Terry Funk. He's my favorite wrestler of all time. Dusty Rhodes was better chasing the championship. You know, back in my early days of Hotlines, and yes, I baited people into this discussion. I used to say Dusty Rhodes is not one of the greatest champions of all time. And I still say that to this day. How the fuck could you say that? Dusty Rhodes, Hall of Famer. How could you say he's not one of the greatest champions? He held the belt for 40-something days or whatever it is. Dusty Rhodes, the money was chasing the title. Once he became champion, a lot of that wore off. That's why he never held the belt more than, look, people out there, there's so many people that never even bothered to ever research how long Dusty Rhodes held those championships for. I mean, seriously, what? Combined. Those combined reigns is, what, a couple of months? Terry Funk could hold it and run with it. Dusty was better chasing the title. Terry was, and listen, if you tell me Terry Funk or Ric Flair, I still go with Ric Flair. Ric Flair was spectacle. Terry Funk, people wanted to see get his ass kicked too. But, you know, for me, Dusty was better chasing the title, not actually the champion. So, Rick Shaw says, Tessa is working the indie scene in Mexico and living with her husband, Daga, in Mexico. Didn't they separate? I could swear that they split. Could be wrong, but I could have swore they split. Yeah, SoFly says the same thing. Okay, let's see. To Taylor, I don't compare Big Show and Andre the Giant. Two totally different eras. Their use was for two totally different reasons. Andre the Giant in the 70s and 80s didn't have to wrestle like the Big Show did in the 90s, 2000s, 2010s. I don't compare the two. Just because they're both gigantic in size, two totally different reasons why they were out there. So, Steve Bobby, could we see a storyline of the Street Profits, the Usos, and the New Day feuding over the tag team gold, culminating in TLC matches? I say no, for the simple reason that the New Day, I don't think, should be anywhere near the titles right now. The Usos, they're battling the Bloodline storyline right now. I think it's more Street Profits, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Judgment Day. That's where I see that going. New Day is reliable. New Day, I could see them in the mix, but I don't see them holding those championships right now. I will say New Day will become tag champs again, but right now is not the time. So, okay. Let's see. How long are we going? We're at 50 minutes already. So we'll bring this home in about 15, 20 minutes. The New Day put over the Viking Raiders didn't help them at all. That's the Viking Raiders' fault. Viking Raiders, listen, when you do very intimidating, videos with fire and sacrifice. Valhalla is here. And then it doesn't translate in the ring. They could grunt. They could wear face paint. They could wear, you know, whatever, war paint. People weren't intimidated. I think some people still think about when they did the stuff with the New Day and some of the stuff they did a while back. Didn't they do stuff with Street Profits when they were doing all those goofy segments and everything? It just, you know, they're damaged. New Day tried. It wasn't New Day's fault. Street Profits, means the Viking Raiders, they tried to put them in NXT. NXT was like, oh, cool. Then 1 week later, they didn't care. Okay. Bobby Means. Sup, Bobby? Could WWE be building a younger women's division with the call-ups that we are going to see in the coming months? When you say call-ups, who do you mean? Like Cora Jade's, Lyra Valkyria's? No, I think they will gradually be brought in. You know, understand something. A couple of years ago, Bianca wasn't a big factor. Raquel Rodriguez has yet to become that woman. Rhea Ripley right now is that woman. There's no need to go youth movement. They have the strongest, the biggest, most quality built women's roster in wrestling. So the women brought up right now, I mean, when people, I've said this 1,000 times on the shows, when people were saying, oh, Indy Hartwell, you got to bring it to the main roster, give Indy a chance. As much as I appreciate Indy Hartwell and rooted for her, I said, you're going to bring in her main roster and she can't leapfrog all those women. She's going to get destroyed. And what has she done? Not much. There's too many stars right now that she would have to leapfrog. You bring in others, they're not going to leapfrog them either. So no, there's no need to go youth. It's not like all the women there are in their 40s. No. All right, we got another super shout out from Triple X, Triple X. Thank you, Triple X, Triple X. All right, let me fix this. I know it keeps hitting it. That's all right. Got to make it official. Here we go. Breakdown. Oh, wait. No, we did that. Quarterback. How do I describe the creator, Great Kabuki? I never liked the Great Kabuki. I always thought he was a low-budget Muda. And I know what some people are going to say. DT, the Great Kabuki, was out before the Great Muda. Yeah, I get it. I never paid attention to the Great Kabuki until AWA was near its end, and then I started seeing like all these horrible gimmicks in wrestling. And Great Kabuki was okay, but to me, Great Kabuki was not very good. Never liked Great Kabuki, never followed him. And understand too, I live in New York, I always lived in New York, so we were not exposed to a lot of other wrestling. Yes, we got NWA, and yes, we got AWA in some capacity, but Great Kabuki was not someone that was featured here in the Northeast all that much. I saw the magazines. I thought he looked pretty cool in the magazines until I actually watched him wrestle. And when I watched him wrestle, I'm like, I don't know, just never ever clicked with Great Kabuki. Not a fan of Great Kabuki. Not trying to disrespect him, but yeah, I don't know. Like, if he wrestled today, I think somebody would probably put him on a Wish advertisement and be like, oh, somebody bought the Great Muda on Wish. You know, it just, I never was a fan of Great Kabuki. So, thank you, Triple X, Triple X. Okay. Tristan is asking my initial thoughts on Bill Goldberg squashing Brock Lesnar at Survivor Series 16. To go back 7 years start thinking about it right now would be kind of tough, but I will say this. I was always a Goldberg fan, and I always thought jackhammer, spear, if you hit it at the right time, you could beat anybody, storyline-wise. I was very surprised that he beat Brock Lesnar. I was surprised that he dominated the way he did. Brock Lesnar, to me, is still a maniac and still a beast. Always was, always will be. But at some point, the beast needs to be tamed. And, you know, when people are like, oh, I can't, how am I supposed to buy in that Cody Rhodes could beat the beast? Well, you know, you got to bring your expectations down a little bit, or you got to bring Cody's up a little bit. Goldberg, spear, jackhammer, and you could beat anybody. I was a little surprised how uneven the match was. And I think they needed to do it that way because Bill Goldberg couldn't sell. Bill Goldberg was never very good at taking offense, you know, as a defensive wrestler. Goldberg was good at video. Goldberg was great as a video game wrestler. Hitting moves, grunting, playing up to the crowd. I was always a fan of Goldberg. This is not any way criticizing Goldberg. But Goldberg was never really great, you know, taking offense from others. So I think that's why the match went the way it did. Because I don't think Goldberg would have been able to sell as good. And, you know, we saw that in some matches over his career. When they went a little too long, because he had to take a little bit extra offense or, you know, from others, he always didn't always look very good. You know, so that's my honest take on it. Kevin Milwaukee with a comment that I will share with everyone. This is interesting. Thank you for the 10 spot. Bring Tyler Bate up to the main roster. Team him with Alpha Academy, where Chad Gable trains him to become a master just like him, so Tyler Bate can transform into his new leadership gimmick, Master Bate. Get it? Master Bate? Remember the sloth earlier? I get it. Master Gable, Master Bate. If this was the Attitude Era, or even if it was the early to 2005, 6, I could see WWE doing that. Master Gable, meet Master Bate. I could get that. I like Tyler Bate in some serious for a minute. I like Tyler Bate. I don't see Tyler Bate, man, becoming this big star in the main roster. I'm sorry. I see Ilya doing it. JD McDonagh, they have a lot invested in. But Tyler Bate, there's just something about him. I'm not criticizing him. I know how talented he is. Just something about him on that main roster. I will say this. I know you were joking about the Master Bate stuff, but I do feel like Tyler Bate would have to be, in some ways, comedic on the main roster. There has to be a comedy element with Tyler Bate. You just do straight-up no-nonsense. I don't think the WWE Universe is going to suddenly warm up to Tyler Bate and be like, oh, my God, he's tremendous. He's awesome. Wow, I fucking love watching him. I don't see that. I think there would have to be a comedy aspect of it. And remember, it was this guy that said back in the day, they're going to need to do comedy stuff with the Revival, a.k.a. FTR. People are like, what are you talking about? They're not comedy. Well, they're going to have to do comedy. Anybody remember? I'm scratching my chest for people that are listening. Then the Grizzled Young Veterans. Remember when I said, oh, they're going to have to do comedy with the Grizzled Young Veterans? Anybody remember the street segments with them? So I think Tyler Bate, they would have to do a little bit of comedy with. So but thank you for that, Kevin. Much appreciated. Much love as always. Taylor is asking who's the better. Who is better, Bayley or Mercedes? If you're saying better at wrestling, I don't know. Who's the better wrestler, Bayley or Mercedes Moné? Huh, that's kind of tough. I kind of lean towards Bayley. I think Bayley sells a little bit better. I think Bayley, when she's a babyface, I think she could garner the sympathy from the fans a little bit better. When she's a heel, she could get the fans more pissed off at her. Now, don't get me wrong. Mercedes Moné, as a heel, I mean, people want to see her get her ass kicked if she shows that cockiness. I don't know. I think right now, I think Bayley might have a slight edge. And that's not saying that Mercedes can't work. Mercedes is tremendous. She's got so many, you know, big moves. You think back of her match against Bianca Belair. That was not a one-sided match. They fucking tore the house down. So, you know, I have to see Sasha back in action a little bit more to be reminded. You know, and plus, you know why I give Bayley the advantage? I'll tell you why I say it here. Bayley can work with almost anybody. As far as Sasha, Mercedes, her quality of her matches usually depended on who she faced. Like, if she faced someone just rather average, trust me, we've talked about it many times over the years, her matches would come off as a little bit more average. But if she was fighting one of the bigger stars, like, it would bring out the best of her as well. I think Bayley just consistently puts out, you know, the same quality no matter who the opponent is. I kind of lean towards Bayley. All right. Will Chisholm, many, many thanks to you, Will. That is awesome. Thank you, my friend. Will Chisholm with a 50 spot. Will says, DT, it's crazy to me to see the media almost just hating CM Punk. Makes me not believe anything they say about anything. It's to the point that it's just sad. At first, AEW fans hated WWE. Now they hate CM Punk. You would think he killed someone. Will, ever since the media scrum, I don't say this for any bragging purposes. I don't think it's a badge of honor. I think that I was just an annoying complainer back in the day, and it came across his feed, and he's like, who's this fat fuck, and just blocked me. So I'm still blocked by CM Punk to this day. I've criticized CM Punk a lot over the years. When they did that documentary, when he was going MMA, I don't remember who did the special, but they contacted me and they wanted to use clips from the Don Tony and Kevin Castle show. And they presented me with four clips and they said, you choose the one and we'll use it on the show. And I gave them the clip that I thought best suit, you know, our views on CM Punk. And there's a lot to dislike about CM Punk. What his best asset is outside of the ring, his best asset is also his worst asset. And that's probably why I like it so much. CM Punk means what he says, says what he means. He has the years and the money and the content at this point in his life enough that he is not going to deal with baby bullshit. He's not going to deal with politics. He's not going to deal with, you know, the cutthroat that is pro wrestling. He's been dealing with it for 20 years. And when CM Punk, you know, I know there are some journalists that are beloved. Not going to mention any names, but there are some journalists out there that are beloved. And when CM Punk came into AEW, became the number one merch seller, I mean, my God, I'm looking at my desk. And just sitting on my desk, look, ice cream wrappers. I've got CM Punk stuff all over this desk. It was a big fucking deal. And a lot of people in AEW hated it. Because even though CM Punk was not on the good graces of WWE, CM Punk also was a threat. A threat that people knew that if they ruffled his feathers the wrong way, he will open his mouth. I mean, you remember when Triple H was in the ring and the whole WWE roster is in the ring and Triple H said something, I don't remember what it was, and you see CM Punk in the background like CM Punk has an I don't give a fuck attitude. I know what I'm worth. I know how important I am for this business, and I know how good I am for this business. So I'm not going to hold back. And when the media scrum went down, the beginning of the problem was Colt Cabana. Colt Cabana and CM Punk are not talking. And when CM Punk came to the company to appease CM Punk, even if CM Punk didn't ask for it, AEW management kept Cabana and CM Punk away from each other. And then Colt Cabana was, you know, not getting, you know, let me say it like this. Colt Cabana may be beloved and needed by members of the elite, by the Dark Order and others in the back. But for Tony Khan, who's he going to want to please more, CM Punk or Colt Cabana? It's not even a choice. So what happens? You get journalists that are being fed crumbs from the elite side of things saying that CM Punk is forcing Colt Cabana out of the company. That when his contract is up, he was forced to Ring of Honor, forced this, forced that, forced this. And because Tony Khan, and I brought it up, and I'm still the only show that ever brought it up, that Ring of Honor media scrum last year, before Ring of Honor was even officially sold to Tony Khan, there was a media press conference, and a reporter asked Tony Khan if the rumors are true that Colt Cabana was being, and Tony Khan avoided the topic. That reporter never bothered to ask the people involved, because you go back at that time, we reached out to CM Punk for comment. We reached out for Colt Cabana for comment. We reached out for so-and-so for comment. You didn't read any of that. You ask Tony Khan. Tony Khan ducks it. What happens for the next 6 months, 5 months, whatever it is, this turns into a giant snowball. Everybody online is saying CM Punk forced Colt Cabana out, blah, 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 this is that. And they know, he knows that the elite side of things, who Tony Khan absolutely needs to run this company, are feeding crumbs to journalists online that are anti-CM Punk and making CM Punk look like this tremendous asshole. Meanwhile, he's trying to help Hobbs, he's trying to help Thunder Rosa, he's trying to help other people, he's trying to help Darby, he's trying to help others, and people out there are trying to give some props to CM Punk. Hey, man, he's helping me, he's looking out for my matches, giving me advice tonight. And then every time that comes out there, you get the media shooting him down. And then when Malachi Black is shown in an MMA pose with CM Punk training with him and he's friends with him, literally that week that he requests some time off, these elite management leak to the media, their favorites, that Malachi Black, mental health issues, this and that. And I remember Malachi Black was in his car and said, you know, I don't appreciate my fucking personal shit being fed to the media. And then you got others. And then Dax has his podcast. And because he's close with CM Punk, he's, oh, I got to shut it down for my family and for my career, this and that. No, he was forced to keep silent. So CM Punk, when he did what he did at the media scrum, CM Punk at that time was truly the voice of the voiceless. CM Punk was the voice of the voiceless. For everybody who works behind the scenes in that company, who, because of politics, because they're not in with the elite crew and all the people that we've talked about, the people that work in the back, you know, they're not being treated the right way. And whatever the reasons being, they got to keep their mouth shut. They got to kiss up. They got to stay fucking quiet because they'll lose their opportunity. And this might be the best opportunity in their pro wrestling career. And CM Punk was fed up with it. He was fed up with the media. And go figure, the first journalist at the media scrum last year is the one that asked Tony Khan 6 months earlier, is it true that CM Punk was forcing out Colt Cabana? In that 6 months, did that journalist ever talk to CM Punk? Did he ever try to clear it up? No, the write-off was, I heard a rumor. Because I heard a rumor, I push it for 6-7 months, that because I don't want to get the true answer behind it, it's a rumor. I'm just reacting to the rumor. So when CM Punk was just fed up with it and said to that journalist, you aspire to be a journalist, right? He had it, and he fucking blew up. And ever since that media scrum and the fight that happened, you know, there was this push for the last year to ruin CM Punk. As I said 2 weeks ago, I think I said it this past Wednesday. I put Elite Authority. Look at the thumbnail from Wednesday's show. Elite Authority. The media and the ones that are in the bag of the elite side of things do not want you to believe that CM Punk has any type of authority when he's doing Collision. So when you hear him going to Jack Perry, when you hear him going to this person, when you hear him going to this person, say, look, you know, if Ace Steel can't do this, then why is Christopher Daniels allowed to do that? It's only fair, right? One side for one side. So everything has got to look negative at CM Punk's way, because those people who feed this crap to these media guys have to keep that impression that the people that run the ship in AEW are the elite, the Young Bucks, Tony Khan, and others behind the scenes. That CM Punk, no, he's just a wrestler that's taken it upon himself to try to be a locker. No, he's got a lot of pull. And they don't want you to know that. And this will continue. They don't like CM Punk. The more CM Punk draws, the angrier they get. Because then it shows that CM Punk is the draw. They got to keep it pulled back so the others feel or perceive just as important. It's disgusting. It's terrible. And it's got to resolve itself. You cannot continue this way. WarnerMedia is not stupid. WarnerMedia knows that if this shit doesn't get resolved, you're this close away of another blow-up. You think CM Punk the second time around is going to be like, you know, because I like Tony Khan so much, and because he gave me an opportunity, because he's paying me really well, you know, I'll just put my tail between my legs and, you know, I'll just take it out in a punching bag when I get home. Oh, that guy, this is his attitude. This is who he is. These motherfuckers push it extra. He's going to fight right back. And this is, I blame a lot on Tony Khan, because Tony Khan comes off as a nice guy that is afraid to tell somebody to their face like CM Punk did. Doesn't have to be a fight, but that's why the tough guy towards Big Swall was done in a tweet. That's why you hear a lot of wrestlers whose contracts were not renewed. You hear them do an interview saying, Tony never got back to me. I tried getting in touch with Tony, never got back to me. I think he is a billionaire, rabid wrestling fan who cares about pro wrestling, who doesn't have a backbone to say in somebody's face, look, I don't want you in the company. I don't think you're helping the company. I think you're a problem. Unfortunately, I got to let you go. I think he just walks away from it. You know, acts like he's busy. You know, I had to take care of the football team. You know, you handle it. That's why I think when they announced all of these managers and all of these people last year, I don't think that was done to make it seem like AEW is stable and this and that. I think he wants to push the authority off to others so he doesn't have to make that decision. So it's a shame. It's a shame because you see what's happening now. They have diminished CM Punk's value, and it's showing. It's showing. And at the end of the day, everything is under AEW. That's the thing that people don't understand or don't want to think about. You know, whether it's Raw, SmackDown, or NXT, it is still under World Wrestling Entertainment Incorporated, soon to be TKO. But whether it's Collision, Rampage, or Dynamite, it's still All Elite Wrestling. And when you want to diminish a guy so much and try to hurt his credibility and hurt everything else, and you want to turn your own fans against someone who is very important in your company, that's toxic. And there's no excuse for it. When you see the shit being thrown CM Punk's way, and these are people who supposedly love AEW, that is fucking warped. That is fucking warped. You love AEW so much that you want to see a good part of it damaged because you don't like someone who is a part of it. You love AEW, and for the betterment of AEW, you put your tail between your legs, say, look, he's an asshole, but he brings fucking money to the table. You know, you think everybody beloved Hulk Hogan when Hulk Hogan was in WWF or WCW? A lot of people didn't like him. A lot of people felt like he was pulling power. People also realized, hey, I'm getting paid some pretty damn good money right now. Let me just fucking keep my mouth shut and get paid. I know that sucks still, but this idea that they don't give a shit about AEW. They don't give a shit about AEW at the end of the day. If they did, they wouldn't be happy when the collision rating is low or the turnout in a house show is low or something negative CM Punk's way. You know, CM Punk doesn't want Jack Perry to fucking get seriously hurt with glass and an insurance risk, which we've always talked about the insurance side of things. But as far as you read online, CM Punk causing problems with Jack Perry. It's toxic. But for most people out there, they don't give a shit. They don't give a shit. Thank you, Will. Thank you for the 50 spy. I appreciate it. I hope some people may not agree with what I just said, but I hope I put my point across. Not this huge fan of CM Punk, but, you know, what's been going on the last year, pathetic. Pathetic. And sooner or later, it's going to blow up again. And when it blows up again, because of the way people have painted CM Punk, it'll be blamed on CM Punk. You watch. All right. We are at 87 minutes. Let's start bringing this home. We'll get into a couple of more and we'll call it. We'll go about 10 more minutes. Don't forget, Monday, we have the Raw Post Show. If you're part of our Patreon family, patreon.com/DonTony, Kevin and I will be up Tuesday doing an off-the-cuff episode. If you're a part of Patreon, you could submit a question now. We're going to get into them on Tuesday. Next Tuesday, Kevin and I will be doing preview and predictions for Payback. I will recap All In next Sunday here because some people have asked for it. I am going to watch it. I'll give you my overall thoughts about it. It's going to be taking place Sunday afternoon. I think it's like 1 o'clock Eastern over here. So I got plenty of time to prep. But we'll be doing regular time slot next Sunday. And we're not coming up here right after All In ends. There'll be 50,000 podcasts all doing that. So we'll definitely talk about it. Okay. Reign of Terror, which one I hated more, John Cena or Triple H? John Cena really didn't have a Reign of Terror. There were some points where I just got nauseated with the Super Cena stuff. But there was always someone else that I could gravitate to get my mind off of Cena. A lot of you out there, believe me when I say this, this is not an exaggeration. If you were not watching wrestling in 2002, you escaped it's a double-edged sword, guys, because 2002, 2003 especially, WWE had a fucking fantasy roster. if you go back and you look at the early 2000, well, after WCW closed, 2002 to 2000, really 2003, 2004. If you even want to go 05 when CM Punk came aboard and others, they had an insane roster. But in 2002, when I was doing my wrestling hotline, we labeled it the Triple H show. There were too many episodes Triple H would open it. Right after the commercial break, we get a recap of what we just fucking saw. Then before hour one, we get a repeat of what happened early in the night showing Triple H. Then we get another segment with Triple H, and then it would close out with Triple H. You'd get 5-6 segments with Triple H on a show. Plus, there's an infamous photo that I've talked about for 20-plus years, and I'll never forget, and I still have it. It's a graveyard, and every tombstone is a wrestler that Triple H just demolished. Maybe he didn't ruin their career, but just demolished in their feuds from Mick Foley to others. I remember the graveyard and every tombstone, and you had Triple H with the shovel, you know, burying. It was just overkill with Triple H. And I've always told this story when I was working for XPW and their first Philly show. We were on the Jersey Turnpike driving to Philadelphia at like 8:30 at night to give them the tape so at like midnight or 2 a.m. they could play XPW's first ever TV show in the Northeast in Philly. And while we were on the Jersey Turnpike in 2002, my cell phone goes off. And that guy Slash that I used to work with was in my car, and he's like, you're not going to believe this. He puts it on speakerphone, and he says, they just fucking gave the belt to Triple H. Like, huh? Eric Bischoff brought back the world WCW big belt, and they just handed it over to Triple H. And, you know, I didn't get in any car accident. We were like, what the fuck are they doing? It was so much Triple H. You despise this guy. It just was overkill. It was overkill. Yeah, I would appreciate it if you all take a moment and smash that thumbs up. Yeah, that would help more than you know. Seriously. Take a moment and smash that thumbs up. Because, you know, everybody talks about algorithms and getting exposure here. You know, I'm not trying to put a guilt trip on anything, but I don't think people understand how much we lose because of, you know, doing the video side of things. It just hurts the overall numbers, hurts. And me, I don't go for that clickbait shit. So little things like that, they'd be surprised. They help because you're telling YouTube, hey, I kind of like this show. Maybe you could show it to someone else. You know, getting a simple recommendation helps. You'd be surprised. All right. Bobby Means is asking if I've ever watched the rise and fall of ECW's documentary. Yes, I did. WWE's version. My God, when that DVD came out, I still remember it clear as day. I had it on pre-order, and it was within, I think, a day or two, the top-selling, because people, a lot of you will know this, because it hasn't been that long. Remember when they used to do the top 10 of the sports DVDs, top-selling DVDs in a month for sports, and WWE would dominate the top 10? You'd have like NFL and MMA and hockey and stuff, and ECW was at the top of the list within a day or two, and it was awesome. I loved the documentary. I was a little angry and disappointed that some of the important elements of ECW were not interviewed because they were working for TNA. I thought there were some names that I would have liked to have seen been able to talk. But I get it. ECW out of business, WWE capitalizing, TNA a competitor. They weren't going to let their employees talk on the DVD. I wish there would have been more input, but they had enough that I really appreciated, really, really enjoyed it. So I kind of wish at some point New Jack was in WWE for a little while. That guy, yeah, crazy son of a bitch. I do miss him a little bit, but always wished. Just, I mean, I knew we were never going to hear NWA, you know, his music in WWE. Could you just imagine? I ask you this. I know the answer already because of the vulgar language. Could you imagine if New Jack could still go and he was alive, obviously, if he could still go and that music hit in AEW? I wonder how the crowd would have reacted to that. By the way, someone asked earlier, I'm not sold that this FTW title's being retired. Why would you retire it? Why would you retire it? AEW is so obsessed with having belts. Why would you retire it? I almost feel like somebody has to come out and confront. I don't know. That's just me. That's just me. Unless maybe something's happening contract-wise with Taz, and as a result, that FTW title is not going to be used anymore. I don't know, but my gut feeling says that title's not being retired. So, all right. Triple X with a super shout-out. Triple X, thank you for the two-spot. Mr. Saito, creator of the Sharpshooter. Underrated. You want to know something? I liked Mr. Saito when he teamed with Mr. Fuji. But I got to be honest with you. When Mr. Saito went back to Japan, and we would see little glimmers of him, not necessarily with WCW, but when you saw him work Japan, like I realized how watered down he was in the WWF at the time. I mean, I watched Mr. Saito live and in person, and Mr. Fuji was the one that everybody was focused on. Mr. Fuji, you know, because he had teamed up with Professor Toru Tanaka in the 70s. Mr. Fuji was, you know, a mainstay. I always felt that fans looked at Mr. Saito in the tag team like they did with Jules Strongbow. When you had the Strongbow brothers, I was never a fan of Jules Strongbow. I always thought Jules Strongbow was like the potted plant of the team. Like, people did not look at Jules any way that they did with Jay. And I felt the same way with Mr. Saito. Mr. Saito coming up with the Sharpshooter, you know, a lot of people are not aware of that. But as far as a wrestler himself, I wouldn't say underrated, because he had a pretty good run in the WWE back in the day. He won some titles. In Japan, he was, appreciated. I think in the States, I think underappreciated might be a little bit better of a word. Underrated, I say no. Underappreciated, maybe a little bit more. So, shout out to John Vickers. See, that's one of the benefits of me being old. At least you don't have to have me say, who is Mr. Saito? Who is that? I don't know who that is. So, trust me, this, you know, and listen, you got young podcasters out there. I don't think anybody is required to know their history, you know, unless you're going to talk about it. If you're going to talk about history, then you have to learn it. You know, you can't get by and just because of what you saw on the WWE Network or what you heard other people say. Because you'll get, trust me, I learned that back in 1998 when I was doing my hotline. People were challenging me with shit from the 60s, you know, or even the early 70s. And I wasn't even alive in the 60s. And I tried to play it off like I knew everything. And people, one time in 1998, somebody asked me about a wrestler in the early 70s, wanted my opinion of him. And I went on my hotline and I said, you know, I thought he was all right, but I just always felt that, you know, he wasn't WWF quality and this and that. And then I had a whole bunch of people laugh at me and I was like, what's so funny? And my people leaving messages on my hotline, you suck, you suck. I'm like, what did I say that was so bad? And then somebody finally told me, I don't remember the wrestler's name. Somebody finally told me he never wrestled for WWF. Wasn't even a wrestler like ever existed in the Northeast. Like somebody had asked me, like, what did you think of his work in the WWF? I was like, you know, he was good, but, you know, I just never felt that he was like, you know, the New York, Madison Square Garden, that's the pinnacle. And, you know, maybe he was better suited for like the Midwest. And people like, he never wrestled here. I learned in 1998, be honest. I learned that early on. Do not try to lie because you'll get caught. Thank you, Triple X, Triple X. All right. We're almost done, everybody. We're almost done. Better wrestler, Kurt Angle or Chris Benoit? You know what? Got to give it to Kurt Angle. It is mind-blowing how quickly Kurt Angle picked up on wrestling. You know, being an Olympic wrestler, obviously that helps. Because you're in the arena, you're on the mat, you know, you're moving around, so you feel comfortable, you know, but it's amazing how quick he picked it up. I watched Kurt Angle. I think it was 1999 or 2000. I've said this before. Where me, Matt Zombie, Brian Damage, and Timmy Arson, the ECW Zombie, God rest his soul. We went to the Garden. It was either, I think it was 99. And Kurt Angle was in a dark match. He didn't debut on the main roster as of yet. And he was not good. I remember we were on the hotline that night. I might even have that hotline episode still. We were like, "Who? What the fuck? This is a guy that the hype, like the match sucked." And Brock was in the match too. And he sucked too. These were before they went to the main roster. And you think 2002? What was it, King of the Ring? Kurt Angle was tremendous. I'm talking about like when he faced Taz and everything, and Taz choked him out quick. But Kurt Angle still, it's amazing how quick he picked up on things. The matches that he had for someone that didn't have that many years pro wrestling, incredible. Incredible. No. Germ says Kurt Angle was the better entertainer. You have to look closely at his matches against AJ Styles and Samoa Joe and TNA. If you watch those, listen, are they five-star matches? That's up for debate. But if you watch those matches closely, there's no thinking. It's reaction, 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 reaction. And it's an insane how quick. And listen, you're not talking 2006. So Kurt Angle was in for a while. But also remember, Kurt Angle still only wrestling, what, 6-7 years? Benoit was doing it since, what, the late 80s, I would say. So you realize that Kurt Angle in such a short amount of time picked it up and was so smooth on both sides. You know, I have to give the edge to Kurt Angle. All right. Two more questions, and we are going to jet. What does Jerm say also? Layout for podcasts on Apple is rough. You got to spend 30 seconds and scroll past all episodes to get to the new one. I don't really go on Apple much anymore. I think Blue Wire, everybody goes to bluewirepods.com. You know, you can access the shows easy. Spotify is pretty good. By the way, for my Patreon family, all our Patreon episodes are on Spotify now. They worked out a deal, something between Patreon and Spotify. You can now enjoy all the Patreon content on Spotify. Obviously, if you're not a Patreon, you won't be able to listen to the stuff. But there's, what, 1,000 episodes sitting there now? So some of you may not even be aware of that yet. So, Benjamin is asking, how is the angle with Paul Bearer done with the cement? Stunt double.
Save me. Oh, yes, you can save me now.
Oh, man. The footage when they were practicing during the day. Oh, that was brilliant. I remember we talked about it on the show. When Paul Bearer ended up getting buried in cement and they were doing the practices early on and the Undertaker is doing his thing and they use a stunt double. In fact, I think somebody said if you slow it down, you could actually see that it's a stunt double. But it was a stunt double. And it wasn't really cement. You're not going to, you know, they whatever it was a stunt double. Chaos is saying, did someone just grab my basketballs? What do you mean? Basketballs. Grabbing my balls? No. I have my, well, we're not going to say it here, but somebody grabbed my balls. What does that mean, Chaos? Somebody just grabbed my basketballs? What? Okay, I see. I see what's going on. Yeah, there's YouTube videos of how they did the Paul Bearer thing. That day of the pay-per-view, that footage leaked out. If you do Wayback Machine and you go back to that date, that leaked out earlier in the day. And people knew that that Paul Bearer was being written off because that footage leaked out. WWE was not happy about that. And at that time, shit like that don't get leaked. How that got leaked, I have no idea. But that was funny shit, man. All right. Definitely two more questions. We're out of here. This one has nothing to do with wrestling, but it's one that warms my heart. Jeff is asking, what's my recipe for garlic, spaghetti, and olive oil? Linguine with garlic and oil. We call it pasta gulagia. It's similar to the segment in Goodfellas. If you really want to be hardcore about it, you get a razor blade or you get a very sharp knife and you cut your garlic paper thin. When you do that and you put it in the frying pan with olive oil, the garlic is so transparent that it melts in the oil. And you melt that garlic in the olive oil and you add even a little butter if you want, salt, pepper. And some people like to dice the garlic into little pieces. You could do that instead. And then just brown it so the garlic is very light. But honestly, you want to cook your pasta first. Cook your pasta first. Cook your pasta, drain it, rinse it out so all the salt gets rinsed out. Then you make your garlic in oil. And you take your garlic, you shake the frying pan like you're making Jiffy Pop, because that garlic will burn quickly. You take olive oil, put it in a frying pan, add pieces of garlic, very tiny little pieces. You don't have to go paper thin, and I'll give you a little hack in a second. And then what you do is you add salt and pepper, and you just shake it like this with over medium heat. That garlic will start getting light brown. When the garlic gets to light brown, take it off the heat, dump the frying pan with the oil, garlic, and everything in the pasta, and just mix it up, add some grated cheese, and that's it. You are done. I have made that shit at 3 o'clock in the morning back in the day when I was fiending for food. But I'll give you a little hack. Saratoga Olive Oil Company. I make no money off of them, but little plug. There is a company on the computer called Saratoga Olive Oil, I think it is. They're located in Saratoga, New York. They sell at least 100 different types of olive oil and balsamic vinegar. They have a garlic-infused olive oil, and they have a butter-infused olive oil. I have both. And if you don't have garlic in your house and you want a little bit of a hack, they have garlic olive oil. Just heat up the garlic olive oil, little salt and pepper, mix that in with the pasta. It's not exactly the same because nothing compares to fresh garlic. But if you want to have it and you don't have garlic in the house, garlic olive oil. Almost as good. I'm on keto right now, so I still have that. But I have spaghetti made out of lupini beans. They have lupin flour, and it's made out of the Italian lupini bean. And it's okay. It's not the same, but, you know, lupin flour spaghetti with garlic and oil. If you're on keto, it's the next best thing. All right, let's finish with one wrestling question. Let's see who gets the last question. Garlic toast. I don't really make garlic toast much. You could use the same recipe with the garlic and the olive oil. Just pour it onto Italian bread. Use a brush if you can. But if you, but I also recommend you put some melted mozzarella cheese on it too. Garlic bread with melted mozzarella on there, and then you put another layer of garlic on top of it. That's really good. Josh is saying, Cash Wheeler's jail girlfriend if something goes bad. I don't know what that means. Cash Wheeler is not going to serve any jail time. Some more information is going to come. Listen, I talked about the road rage incident yesterday. I got a DM from somebody who I trust, who knows a few people close to this situation, said to me, DT, you're spot on about there's more about this road rage incident that happened prior to Cash, you know, showing his gun, say it bluntly. And I don't know if either one had a dash cam. That was just something I brought up yesterday. But more is going to come out. And ultimately, I don't want to start any controversy, but I will say this. If you take this as news if you want. If what this person said to me is true, as far as Cash Wheeler side is going, this guy, I think his name is Daniel Mata. This guy is not as innocent as you think he is. The only reason why Daniel Mata thinks he has the upper hand is because Daniel Mata did not show a gun. They were both assholes in this. But unfortunately, Cash, when he took it to the level of showing his rifle, that's when this Daniel Mata guy said, we got him. Fuck this guy. You want to be an asshole? You want to show me your gun? No problem. Now I call the cops. That is not far-fetched. More is going to come out that's going to accuse this Mata guy of not being as innocent as is perceived. Will he drop the charges? Maybe. Will they just plead it down to a violation? Maybe. I mean, we were spot on about the Tammy stuff. I think we're going to end up being spot on about the Cash Wheeler stuff as well. So, all right. Yeah, let's end with that. Because that's kind of sort of news. This Daniel Mata guy is not as innocent as being portrayed in the police report. Let's finish with that. I don't know anything about him. So please, I'm not trying to paint this guy as being a dirtbag or anything else. But again, as we said yesterday, use a little common sense. You know, this guy made it seem like, oh, I saw this car weaving in and out of traffic, so I pulled to the right and let him go. And as he drove by, he showed me his rifle and started following me. Why? Because you got a nice ass? Like, let that, just picture yourself on the highway. You know, it's like a bad Kurt Russell film from like 1995. Like, why would that even happen? And Cash Wheeler? You know, if you would have said to me, it's like Hack Johnson, who's a lifelong felon that just wanted some, I just felt like fucking with somebody that day. That's different. More's going to come out. Guys, it's been fun, as always. I got to now type up a little synopsis for this episode so the others out there can turn around and see what we talked about and maybe they want to tune in. I would appreciate if some of you out there could take a moment and smash that thumbs up if you enjoyed the episode. I know we asked earlier and only about 14 of you obliged. So, you know, you scratch my back, I scratch yours. That's a little saying where I come from. But, you know, as long as we keep getting, you know, a little momentum here doing this YouTube stuff, we'll keep it going. I don't want to go back to audio only, and that's not happening anytime soon. But, you know, definitely I don't want to just, you know, get stuck in YouTube purgatory because it does hurt everything else. And at the end of the day, you know, sometimes you got to make decisions. But right now, you know, we're having some fun here and we'll keep it going. So I'll be live Monday night after Raw. We'll talk about Raw. We'll get into the wrestling ratings for the week. And again, when we talk about Edge, the retirement, I think some people are going to be a little disappointed with the numbers that we get into. And, yeah, we'll talk about whatever else is going on. But much love, everybody. I am out of here. You all have a good rest of your Sunday or Monday.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a podcaster. For me to live any other way was nuts. To me, those goody-good people who work shitty jobs for bum paychecks and took the subway to work every day and worried about their bills were dead. I mean, they were suckers. They had no balls. If I wanted something, I just took it. I ran everything. I paid the bills. I paid the host. I even paid the masked maniac. Everybody had their hands out. Everything was for the taking. We always called each other good fellas. You would always hear from somebody. You're gonna like Don Tony. He's all right. He's a good fella. He's one of us. But if you're part of my crew, nobody ever tells you they're gonna get rid of you. It doesn't happen that way. There weren't any arguments or curses like in the movies. See, your haters come with smiles. They come as your friends, the people who've claimed they care the most for your life. And now that's all over. And that's the best part. Today everything is different. There's lots of action. I don't have to wait around for everything like everyone else. Oh, I didn't get the vaccine? Fuck you, vaccine me. Oh, your delivery guy has COVID? Fuck you, feed me. Right after I moved here, I ordered egg noodles and ketchup, and I got spaghetti with meat sauce. I'm no longer an average nobody, while they get to live the rest of their lives like a bunch of schnooks.